I sent my notice in to Al and Ben and was ready to dissolve the partnership because it was just a really rough time. I was ready to be done, just not wanting to go through dealing with the family aspect, dealing with the business and the emotional side of everything. Mm-hmm. But that's how much we care, too. I was willing to step out to make sure that everything was still moving forward.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Al Alexander and Ryan Luce built Con Equip by doing things differently in a rough transactional industry leading from opposite ends but toward the same goal. The real story is not how they grew, it is how they kept the business and their partnership from breaking while it did. So tell me a little bit about your business in terms of your revenue size. What is it that you do for your customers? So tell me a little bit about the business itself and what you do.
We'll do about combined about 145 million this year. We've got about 175 employees. And everyone always says, well, that's incredible. How'd you do it? And everyone thinks it happens overnight. And this is, 18 years in, right, of operating this thing to get to that scale. So it's been a fun journey. It's even crazy to us, I think, when we say the numbers to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Starting with Al and our other partner, Ben, with two guys in a room selling heavy equipment parts to where we are today. I don't think we ever could have dreamed that.
Yeah, I mean, Humble Beginnings is all across our country, right? And you hear that story of, it started in the garage, or, we started it in the attic of my house in Buffalo. It is an American dream, right? Like all across North America, people start things in obscure places. But what we did at that point, our mission really was to create kind of a different option for folks who mm-hmm. needed heavy equipment parts. So the way our industry is the OEM dealers like Caterpillar and John Deere, and a lot of people get their equipment and dig dirt from there, right? And if you don't have a lot of one type of brand, or maybe you're a smaller outfit and don't have a contract or a fleet contract with these big players, you don't get as good of a support, we'll say, for parts when things are broken. So we wanted another option out there, and we were able to bring together all these supply lines. And in fact, we probably have more supply lines than anybody in the country. Yes. Into all makes and models of parts. So it's kind of become like almost our niche and our calling card to be a one-stop thing and serve anyone from, someone who's got one machine to a 2,000 machines, So it's really, mm-hmm. it really been a cool thing it's evolved into.
Yeah, and think of it like, AutoZone or, any of those aftermarket car shops, right? We did the same thing, but with heavy equipment parts. But you can't have physical location because these parts can weigh 5 pounds to 20,000 pounds. So we kind of put it all together to give the marketplace another offering outside of just the OE.
As you're starting the company, obviously the two of you have known each other for at least quite some time, it seems. Who's the make it up person and who's the make it real person?
That's interesting. Well, I am the make it up. And then Ryan is definitely the make it real. I would say absolutely. Yes. We got together. Our partner Ben, who we started the company for a couple of years running it. We heard Ryan on the radio. We needed some business advice, and he had a radio program. And we were just every week going by like, man, we're selling a ton, but we just can't figure out the accounting and the numbers and list, whatever, like how to scale it more than us. And we just kept on hitting these ceilings, So we called this guy on the radio and said, hey, man, we like your advice on the radio. Like, could you give us a few minutes of your time? And he's like, yeah, I also do accounting. He had this whole list of things he could help us with. I'm like, awesome. Cool. Set up an appointment. I brought him Tim Hortons coffee, I think, which, is appropriate in our area of the world. And it's like,
sure.
we became fast friends,
Yes.
But what a blessing he was to me and our partner Ben, too, at that time. It was, a lot of new companies fail early because they just can't figure out some things or see from a different angle, because you're in the business. It's weighing down on you, And this guy, oh, man, his talent is to kind of, again, take a dream or anything you want to do and make it actually happen. He's definitely God gifted him with that.
Yeah. So one of the first things we did with them was – teaching them how to work on the business and not just in the business, to set aside specific time a week. I think I started you guys with just a couple books about business in general, you know, and 1 or 2 hours a week working on the business instead of in it. And then really trying to understand, what do they do that's so magical and special? And then how do we turn that into a process and duplicate that into other people? I think that's what we've been really successful at is we always joke that Al and myself or our other partner, Ben, we've done every job in the business. But what we've been able to do is then turn that into a process and put that into someone else, you know, just to keep the business moving forward.
Mm-hmm. What was it exactly that made you go on the search and move to the next level and ask the questions you did?
Ben and I both are very similar. We're both salespeople, we also are extremely high energy. And God has gifted us with the ability to have a really high capacity as well. So we'll juggle 15 things, show up without planning, and it all work out. You know, it's just kind of how we run. And it's kind of cool that we're together in that way. And then when we met this guy, you know, it's like he had the college degree. Me and Ben didn't. We were like, hey, can we use your college degree? It'd be cool. Maybe put our names on.
Can I borrow that for a minute?
Yeah. You know, he was so organized and accomplished, you know. But my point in, like, what happened first, because the book he gave us was about delegating. And it was about reproducing yourself. As he talked about, like, let's make a process. And then see if we can teach it to somebody is what his plan was. And we were like, oh, I don't know if we want to hire anybody. I might like ruin somebody's family life by not being able to pay them or something, you know?
Yeah.
I just was really worried about it. Ben was too. And so he's like, you know, it'll be okay. Like, you're grown men. So, you know, man up or whatever. It'll be okay. That encouragement, you know, again, him giving us some things to read and him meeting with us, you know, Ryan meeting with us monthly or whatever it was, really gave us that courage to step out. There was a lot of prayer involved too and different things. But, you know, we thought about the first hire. Who's it going to be, you know? And so we hired, and that's where we realized you can delegate what you do to somebody else, right? And then they might have better talents. They might be better at it than me. You know, or whatever, and that was really exciting, and that got me used to that, and got Ben used to it, and I think from there we realized people, you know, every person who came in brought a new experience, a new talent, new passion, and like with Ryan's help and with my partner and the way he leads people well and also teaches people well, you know, we almost divided what we do in the business. You know, he had a skill set, I had a skill set, Ben had a skill set, and we like split up the business in three parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did finances, right? And yep. Organization and process. Ben did sales management and training and stuff like that. And I did marketing and help with sales as well. And then, of course, come up with the craziest ideas that Ryan can accomplish. So, like, that was, it, you know, and then we added each person. Had again more skill sets, more passions we can employ, and we were willing to like let people be them, you know, almost that was our mission, like, hey, let's find people who have some passion and drive and, you know, ethics and meet our core values and love our culture and just give them the empowerment, right? That's I think the way delegation works, right? If you do it right.
When you think about your core values, when you think about delegating, what are your core values?
Wisdom, diligence, integrity, character, grace, humility. And so we just started paying attention.
Yep.
And like seeing like what was in them. And we came up with five, right? And then years later, someone wanted to add a sixth. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. We got these five because we observed them. I don't want to just throw one in because we think we want to attain it or it looks good. Like, let's just wait. So we almost waited like a year or two to see if we can see that fifth one. The fifth one was grace, or the sixth one, excuse me, was grace. Added later, because we wanted to see, are people graceful in the way they interact with customers or each other? So like our core values are all over the walls, and you know, Ryan teaches them regularly on meetings, or I do, or you know, we just talk about them all the time. What else do we do with our core values?
It's how we hire and fire too. Like even in the interview process, the core values are right up front for anyone who wants to come to work here. Just to try to let them know who we are before they walk in the building. And then the last line of defense for us on is this person right for our company, is do they meet our core values, regardless of how talented they might be or how much, you know, profit or sales they might produce for us. If they don't fit our core values, then they're not part of what we want here at ConEquip. And we just have taken a really, I think, good stance to keep the whole organization moving forward, because it's not just the core values. The core values also reflect our culture. And if we have an issue with culture, it's usually because someone isn't following our core values. And we take culture very seriously.
How has the core values really been enabling that delegation? So you come together, you've got now three people, you're going to run this business, and it sounds like you had a consulting relationship at first. When did that relationship become, hey, we're going to go run and build this business together?
Yeah, so I think the consulting lasted for maybe a year to 18 months for on a monthly basis, and then it went to, I was there 5 days of a month, you know, one for a week, and it really progressed. So probably in about 2 or 3 years, it was to the point where I needed to be there full-time working with you guys. And I saw the opportunity of what was in front of us, too, right? In order to do this, I had to give up my accounting and business consulting practice, and more than happy to do that, because doing things by yourself, I was also very lonely. You know, the entrepreneur who wants to do everything themselves, and seeing how Al, Ben, and I, we complemented each other. We always say that the three of us individually could never have done this, because the way the personalities mesh, the way our skill sets mesh, you kind of get this, with three people, this well-rounded one person to operate this business and to grow it. So probably about 2 or 3 years after that, I came in full-time. And then, man, we had 8 people, I think, when I came on board full-time. And then we just started ramping it up and duplicating process and getting training classes in and just really moving the whole thing forward. The marketplace was just so ripe for what we were doing through, as Al had mentioned, through the marketing programs. Our industry is typically a little bit older in their thought process, and we were one of the first into the Google AdWords and really the digital space for heavy equipment parts. And it was just moving quicker than we had ever imagined it would.
Yeah, in the early years, it was like 70% growth.
Yeah.
75% growth. That's a lot to do for years. And especially to scale that way with, I couldn't bring much to the table classically trained at all, or Ben either. We just show up and, you know, pour our heart all over everything, you know. And that gets you only so far. Just so you know, that only gets you so far. You need to have other plans and everything. But what's interesting about what Ryan's saying of his journey in, Ben and I, almost every month we met with him, would talk to each other and be like, hey, did Ryan send you a bill yet? And Ben would be like, no, he didn't send me a bill. And I'd be like, should we bring it up? What we realized is we had a business, and this is foresight of the way Ryan involved it. I just wanted a lifestyle business at first. So it was just like, I wanted to have, you know, freedom and, you know, whatever.
You just wanted a job that you didn't have to have a boss, that you were the boss.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. A lot of people start businesses that way, right? And he had the foresight to know, like, there's got to be a certain scale we get to because of how our business started. Is we were brokers of parts. We didn't go buy parts, stock them in a shelf, and then sell them. We took any request from anyone and delivered every time. And so, no one knew. Like, we would tell if somebody asked, like, hey, do you have these parts? We're like, no, we have a partner or a friend or someone that's going to ship it for us. And that's how we did it. And again, we just delivered all the time and anything you asked. And so that's kind of how we did it. But what the foresight is, we had to get to a certain scale, like I said. And what that really did was gave us almost a fuel on the fire and license to grow fast. Because sometimes you're like, oh, I want to keep control of this growth, you know, and whatever. But we figured out like the most effective things to do to make sure always get done, so that while chaos is happening, we knew customer was served well, or, you know what I mean? Like our reputation was growing and all the things that were happening were at least in that same direction and not being pulling and tugging, tug of wars with things. So we at least had enough planning to get everybody and the core values. Like if we trained them right away and made sure people had them and like correct people and even mentor people and grow people by our values, they were able to make again, the same decisions going the same direction. Yes. And it wasn't like we had to be there to pull everybody.
No, because it was, we even on the core value decision making process, it is a process. If one of our leadership team or one of our staff members can come to us and say, I made this decision because of grace or because of humility or character, they don't get questioned on that because they're internalizing that core value process of decision making the same way we would. Mm-hmm. Now, there's still mentoring and everything that has to go along with that, but it's been much easier, I think, to let things go knowing that they're getting this. They're making the same decisions we would because we've outlined these core values that we make decisions by.
I mean, that's all great, and it definitely helps you break through the ceiling over and over again. And at the same time, it's not always all sunshine and lollipops, right? And you just didn't come together and the three of you, oh, now we're just going to grow to, you know, over $100 million and all smooth sailing. And I'm sure that there was a season or a time where you felt like it was either the end of the business or you had to push through. Tell me about a time where it wasn't all rosy and people were making perfect decisions on core values and, you know, all smooth sailing.
There was a place where we all hit our ceiling, all three of us, mm-hmm. at different times. You know, I had a time where, and it almost was like a lesson that each of us had to learn, right? And it was some of it was spiritual, you know, I'll be honest with you. And it was like a lesson I had to learn. I remember like regularly listing all the things I had to do and all my responsibilities and thinking, always coming to Ben and Ryan, like, I need help. You know, there's just like this ceiling I keep on hitting. I can't get it all done. And cause I was doing marketing and I had a couple helpers and, but not any, you know, big hires of people who had actual experience. And it was just a little bit overwhelming. And it was really difficult to get through that. And I remember Ben as well had the same exact thing. And during that time, it created animosity every single time. Like there was almost like I got bitter for a while, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there was times like, I'm quitting. Like, you can't quit, Al. You own the business. I'm like, no, I don't care. I'm not showing up anymore.
Easier just to go back to a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It would be. Right. Oh, my goodness. It would be great to get a check that I didn't have to worry paying another, you know, 30 people or 40 people, you know. But like... And then Ben had the same exact thing. It was just, he went through the same thing with sales management and all this stuff, and I can't get it all done. And, you know, it was really interesting how we all came to that. And Ryan had the exact same experience, you know. It was almost like either you can't give up control, right, yeah. or it was out of control and you can't control it. It different for each of us in a way. But, yeah, for me, it was really, really difficult. And I just... longed for delegation and when I knew like the business couldn't provide financially more help, I felt bitter toward my partners over that for a while, right? And it was interesting how that had to work through that and like, oh man, are my expectations wrong? You know, and that's what it was, you know, my expectations were wrong. And I just kind of adjusted those and realigned and just kind of, I did a lot of spiritual reading in the Bible. I believe in God and always seek out that kind of thing, and that helped me. I did a lot of asking for prayer, talked to pastors, and just like, you know, I can't have anything against my brothers. You know what I mean? We're all in this together. Why would I, you know what I mean? Look at them. And it was just me looking for an escape or an answer or blame. And I don't think there's any place in business for that. Like even now, as I've gotten past that, I never look for blame. I'm looking for solutions. So that whole experience personally changed the way I look at problems and when we're facing a ceiling and how we get over it. But I mean, I don't know if you can kind of speak to your ceiling and what happened there too.
Yeah. So I think my ceiling was, I'm a little bit more hard-headed than Al. So it usually takes Al or Ben yelling at me for me to get out of my own way. Right. And that's just the way I am. I just feel like I can always handle more work. You know, the family might suffer, but it's just work. So I kind of always use that excuse in it too. But we were probably about 75 people, maybe 85 million in gross. And I was operating as a CFO. But the accounting department was not organized. We weren't ready for a review or audit. And it was hindering the entire organization from moving us to the next level. And I will always remember Al and Ben sat me down. Al yelled at me for about 20 or 30 minutes for me to get out of my own way. And I finally had that realization that I have to hire a CFO or a controller or start to let go of some of these things. Because even though I love processing and handing things down, there were still these things that I really wanted heavy control over. And finances is always one of them in my book, just because that's where the field that I came from. But that was stopping the organization from moving forward. So I think more than anything through that and through what Al was talking about too is we've learned to develop these open and honest communication channels when something is wrong or one of us notices one of us is off. Now, praise the Lord, the three of us have never been off kilter at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's always been two are pretty stable, one's got something going on. So again, the benefit of being in a partnership to do that has been great. But it's them noticing things in myself or me noticing things in Al that need to be addressed and talked to in that open line of communication. We haven't found that in a whole lot of workplaces where the partners are so willing to call each other out that you need help or you need to do this or Al putting his hand up saying, I'm going to quit. And then us having to figure out what can we do to make sure that Al doesn't quit because we really need him to run the organization. And then it's taking that leap of faith. Like when Al needed help in marketing and he was still doing some payroll and all this stuff, we had to hire people and we didn't necessarily have the finances to do it, but to step out and know that if the business is going to go to the next level, we have to bring some people in that are smarter than us, that know more than what we do to drive this thing forward.
I think it's really interesting that you hit the ceiling all at different times. And I think that's pretty common, right? I think that organizations, when you hit the ceiling, it's really at three different levels. You hit the whole entire company hits the ceiling and the business isn't growing. You hit it on a departmental level or a team level, or you hit it on an individual level. And it's a little bit somewhat unpredictable when and where you'll hit the ceiling and how that will occur. What do you think about growth in terms of, there's just that fear, the fear of growth, the fear of being uncomfortable, then just getting out on the edge and saying, okay, we don't have the money to do this, but I'm just going to go do it and let's see what happens. Did you experience that? How do you think about that? How do you overcome the fear?
Well, we don't fly by the seat of our pants, even though it seems like that. That's just for entertainment purposes for people who are watching.
Well, of course.
I always just go back to when it comes to facing something. I always loved science, math, things like that. My math brain, but we always we will use a scientific method for most things, right? Mm-hmm. Like just a basic hypothesis. Then we'll do a little test and see what the results of the test and see if we can kind of reproduce them and then we'll put more in. So we never really jump in wholeheartedly. So like for instance, my situation. I got someone in our business to give me some of their time because I seen a talent or passion for the marketing thing and then seen what that little kind of involvement did. Now that person had other responsibilities and they obviously in our formula of making the business, stay afloat, that they were an integral thing, but it gave me a little bit of your time. Let me see what I can get out of that time and then scale that. Right. And so we always did everything with like a, an educated, systematic way. And we always, in that, scientific method, whatever you say, would uncover a reason, like a green light to go or a red light to no, or mm-hmm. maybe we need a different way, like an A/B test or whatever. It might be the wrong person, So we're just always evaluating that, in that way. So when somebody has fear to try to step out, it might be because they haven't done enough research, but there is also a principle we definitely live by is we'd rather make a decision now that is like 75% good than than try to get to 100 before we move. Like I would rather do it today than wait, 2 weeks. It just always has worked for us. And I don't think we've ever can think about a scenario. I can't think about a scenario where waiting was a good thing. Maybe, because I don't think that way. I always want to prove myself right. Cause I love acting without, without waiting. But, it usually works out better that way. Just, I don't know. What's your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of that entrepreneurial spirit too. Like we want to make sure I'm more like, is it 60% right then we just move forward with the decision. Because we can always change the decision or move things around or whatever it might be. I don't want anything to hold us back on what growth could look like or profitability or training for our staff. Like it's just, there's just right things to do. And if we can get over that 50% mark on does it make sense, then we'll try it. We'll test it. But we're never 100% fully in on something until we see results telling us that, yes, this is going to work.
Yep. Yeah. And I've even had, like, I remember meeting somebody in our customer service and just, you know, talking to, getting to know our different departments and teams and, you know, and realizing this one person had like a talent for making content, right? And at the time it was just me and another guy making content. Again, we just really needed some help. It's like, hey, can you part-time like feed me some ideas of content and memes? And again, just little things like that to test it out. I didn't have to build and hire a fully formed person 40 hours a week to know and to prove to, you know, Ben and Ryan at the time that I needed extra help. And here, I got a little extra help and look what paid off. In the first memes that she gave me, which, you know, again, I didn't think that way because I was older. She was younger. So she was meme-brained, you know, in the generation she was in. Like killed it. I could not believe the response we got, right? And so they got to see that because they, you know, I think we had like almost attention. I felt like they didn't believe that social media was a thing that we needed to be on. And I'm like, no, social media is where we need to be, you know? Because, again, our industry was also behind 10 years and, you know, we're a little older at that time, you know, not really on the internet, social media. And man, what that did, right? So I noticed that kind of thing is our pattern to get over what we could fear. You know, we go for the facts, we do a test, we get the proof, you know, then you really don't have to go into the unknown. And then it eliminates the fear because the fear is just, you know, for, you know, being fearful of something you don't know. But you put some light on it, you put some proof on it. It's not fearful anymore.
This reminds me of Jeff Bezos. He kind of made famous this whole idea of one-way door decisions and two-way door decisions, where if you got a two-way door decision, if you're 50, 60, 70% certain, just go through because you can go back through the other direction. You can undo it. Mm-hmm. How do you think about the one-way door decisions, though, where once you make that decision, it's a permanent choice, so you're not going to easily come back from that, if at all?
I don't know that we've had any one-way door decisions because of the model of testing and things we've gone through with it.
Well, we just got into partnerships recently in our business.
Yeah, I guess that's a one-way door.
And that's what's coming to mind.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we... Let's just say for the sake of all of our different risk aversions risk passions, we'll say, we always did what I'm talking about earlier, but this acquisition thing, you know, because you're like getting married to somebody, so to speak, another business.
Yeah.
And that is a one-way door thing.
Like, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Indeed.
It's our first experiment into it, right?
Yeah. It was scary. And like, even the whole process, and it's like, oh, I don't know. Should we push the trigger? Right? We already committed. You know, we already signed. I can't go back? No. You know, it's like, all right.
You
here
are
we go.
Now.
Here's our new baby.
Right.
But,
right.
But, you know, we've got the philosophy behind the acquisition strategy and, you know, there's certain metrics that have to be met. So there is comfortability that builds into that.
Yeah.
But still, when we're, you know, forking out a lot of money for these things, and is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Do we have the right team to manage this? Are they the right team? Do they fit culturally? Once it's done, there's no going back. We got to make sure this thing works. Mm-hmm. Right.
So you might take a little bit longer to make those decisions versus those two-way door decisions on entering social media or those types of things.
Yeah.
And you can pay professionals hundreds of thousands of dollars to help you.
Or more.
They're very happy.
Indeed you can.
They're very happy Indeed to accept that check.
Yes.
You know, right. Leaning on professional services, I love lawyers and accountants for what they do for us with through due diligence. If you get an account, obviously acquisitions and mergers, you have to have that, right? Like there's a lot of protections they bring and they could create a halfway door to come back, maybe for like a little cat to come back, you know, like a doggy sized door to help you. You won't be able to get everything through, but
You know, I think right. that goes back to part of us not necessarily being afraid. Yeah. If there was an area that we weren't sure about, we always went out and paid someone who was smarter than us to help us through that situation or to look at it from a different angle.
Mentorship. Yeah, we always sought out mentorship.
Mentorship in those areas. We really just kind of took the overall philosophy. Like, we might not fully understand it, but there is someone out there that we can hire to help us understand it, you know, whether it's an attorney or accountant or whatever it might be, which wasn't necessarily our philosophy in the beginning when we couldn't afford certain things. So we just stayed in the area of what we knew the best. But there is just like it's like a force multiplier when you get people who are smarter than you in the room and have done things that you've never done to be able to leverage their information.
It's just such a great example of your core value being humble and having humility to admit that you don't know the answers. And there's people out there that have been gifted with certain skills and abilities that you don't have.
There's energy, spelled E-N-R-G, when entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial leaders are in the same room. Energy is the community where leaders like you find connection and the who's and the how's to make your business thrive. There's a free-to-attend Energy chapter in over 75 cities and virtually across North America every month. And now, Energy runs the EOS Conference in North America, so you get the community and content you need to turn your vision into a reality. Join your local chapter, grab your conference ticket, because traction happens faster when you're connected to the right community.
I want to go back to the three of you hitting the ceiling at different times. It's a little stressful. You're not sure if you're going to make it or not. What type of counseling did you do to kind of work your way through there, maintain the relationship? Because a partnership in business is very similar to a partnership in life. How did you navigate through that? How did you become open and honest and transparent like you were talking about earlier? Were you always open, honest, transparent with one another?
I think it's a journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think we grew into it. And the little evidences along the way, like I started with, when you asked about ceilings personally, with something I was experiencing, because I think I hit the ceiling first. And then I learned to seek counsel, right? So I always had, as our business, we always had mentors. And yes. We'd always have access to somebody who's been ahead of us, even if they're ahead a year is great, or in small accomplishments, they can give you some things to avoid or pitfalls that they've learned, or just, you know, a higher view of a situation. Because if you're in your feelings, right, you're all emotional about something, they can kind of give a outside perspective that's more logical or rational. And, you know, my wife has been a blessing to me for that situation too. My different pastors that I've had at churches or whatever it might have been, different business leaders. And so I'll personally seek personal counsel. And I know Ryan probably does the same.
Yes.
Ben does the same. And then we'll try to bring that back. Because I think when you show up in any relationship, it is not on the other person to like make you happy or satisfied or fulfill whatever. It is on you. Like, you show up wholly, healthy, you know, physically, spiritually, mentally, whatever, that's on you to make yourself that way. And then you can show up with all that and probably respond better or be more compassionate or even understanding. And that's why I always find it funny that people always say, I don't know if you ever heard this, but you should never have a partner in business. I mean, I hear that and then they'll be like, hey, yeah. So how's your business structured? Yeah, I got two partners. They're like, oh, I shouldn't say. That's a little awkward now. How's that going for you?
Yeah.
They'd be like, how's that going for
you?
Like, pretty good. I probably wouldn't do it another way. But like, even like Ryan going through his ceiling, right? And it's a journey that everybody goes on of like, it's all a personal thing, honestly.
Yep.
And, you know, we, in him not wanting to let go, if I might speak freely, mm-hmm. him, you know, we, well, just I think humans in general want to be in control. Right. And I think your level of wanting to be in control is directly proportionate of how much you care. So I always say, Ryan, he thankfully has tissues right off the screen. You can't see, just in case, because he cares so much. He wants to make everything work out right for everyone completely. Right. And I know that about him. And so like him letting go of control, right, was such a big thing for him because he cares way, way too much, almost too much. But and so I knew the reasons behind it. And I already went through this personally, so I can kind of stay a little calm to see, hey, how it unfolds, because I know it's going to be a personal journey. So my only saving grace to when he went through it was just that I went through it enough to have enough compassion to wait on the sidelines and have patience to see him go through it. And you talked about it not being easy. It isn't, because there's backlash and the things we go through personally in business spill over on others. So like when he went through it, it was a personal thing for me because there was my daughter worked with us as an HR rep, and that their relationship was strained through the process of him working through giving up control. And it's like, okay, now we're involving family into this. This is really difficult. You know what happened though? I went home telling my wife what's going on, and she, and I didn't tell her for weeks. I don't know. It was a very long time because it was like,
But they can see that we're struggling.
Right? Yeah.
Our wives can always see.
And she's like, well, why don't you get like a mentor or a counselor to come and talk to you guys? I'm like, a counselor? We're men. We don't do that.
This isn't like marriage counseling. This is like business partnership counseling. Right.
Right.
I'm so glad we went to counseling.
I know.
I don't know if we talked to a pastor, a friend of ours. We were like, hey, do you know anybody in business, you know, a leader of a company? I forgot where he came from, but there was a guy we met locally that was referred to us. And again, we had similar faith, which really helped. And the guy has already been ahead in business many years. And he has like a wonderful spirit. Mm-hmm. And he met with us. And he isn't a counselor, but he counseled us like a,
yeah,
you know, a fellow CEO, you know, and I think we needed somebody who had that because I think he was involved in family business too, right?
Yes, he was, yeah.
He had insight into, because we felt like family and we're dealing with family,
yeah.
Right? And we're dealing with my daughter at the time too in that. It's just like a backlash of that control giving up, you know, thing, that ceiling that he was hitting. And man, thank God. This guy gave us his time weekly or whatever it was at first, or monthly or biweekly, to give us, yeah, you know, these guidance points. And he asked questions that were so freaking hard to answer in front of each other. Right. Like things, yeah, we should not. You just don't. Men don't say to each other, or business leaders don't say to each other, or whatever. And but I think that that was the best experience ever, honestly.
Yeah. And we spent probably about at least a year with him.
Oh, yeah.
Working through all that, and you know, and you're still trying to operate the business at the same time. You're still trying to get things good at home with the wife and kids, and going through all this stuff. It was probably the most emotional and stressful time the three of us have ever been through. But walking through that together, we've came out so strong, and the relationship is so different by actually getting that third party in to walk us through our own faults, our own issues, and trying to recognize where each of us are in our relationship with everything that was going on. If we wouldn't have done that, we would not have the business now.
So clearly you came to a moment in time where you were asking yourself, you know, I don't know if this is worth it. I don't know, you know, family stress, interpersonal, yeah, stresses. You know, did you reach that point in time where it's like, and you said earlier, Al, like, I just kind of want to go get a job and just get a check.
That was my turn. I'm the one who quit going through that one. Mm-hmm. And then Al and Ben pulled me back in, and that's when we went into the counseling to get through that. So yeah, we've each had our moments.
So you actually quit?
Yeah, I sent my notice into Al and Ben and was ready to dissolve the partnership because it was just a really rough time, mm-hmm, going through it. They pulled me back in. We got started in the counseling, and of course this all happened while they were on vacation, the two, you know, Al and Ben as well, so I'm the only one left right in the shop. And we worked through it, but I was ready to be done, just not wanting to go through dealing with the family aspect, dealing with the business and the emotional side of everything. And but that's how much we care too. I was willing to step out to make sure that everything was still moving forward, just because none of either the three of us want to be the person who hinders the organization or the overall philosophy or our core values from not moving forward.
Yeah, that was a wonder. Actually, that was a really good tell into how his heart is that big. You know what I mean? Like, again, you know, there's a proverb about like two women fighting over a baby, and the king Solomon says, "All right, well, I got an idea. Let's cut them in half." And the real mom is like, "Oh, no, you can have the baby. Like, save the baby." Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right, I'm like, "Oh, right. that's the true heart, right?" And so what it allowed me to do too, in a sense, is almost take an ownership of where I had a problem in it all. Just like when they helped me through my ceiling, they took personal responsibility to get me to not want to quit. Why did I want to quit? Well, I was overworked. So they got me help. He went through the exact same. It's almost the same ceiling.
It is.
Yep. I should have went, because I knew this was happening for me in my life, and they helped me. Why didn't I, you know, and I would go to Ryan, Ben would go to Ryan, we'd have talks. "Hey, man, you need help. Well, you know, I could have just hired somebody and forced him to do it, right? I could have said, "No, we're going to be done with this business if you don't hire." I could have done that 2 years earlier for him, mm-hmm. right? I already went through it, you know? And so, but again, we didn't know how to communicate with each other. And we were in business for what at that time? 14 years?
Yeah, 13, 14 years, yeah.
Like, we're on this journey still, right? And I'm so glad that we've, you know, come through these things. But I'm sure there's going to be another ceiling. I can't mm-hmm. wait for that ceiling. We're gonna knock it out the park. It's going to be awesome.
Yes, it is absolutely inevitable. So you're well over $100 million in revenue, which very, very few organizations get to. I mean, the number of people who get to your size is very, very small. It just sounds like mostly just the three of you. At what point did you say, "Hey, we need to start building out a leadership team," if you did? And was there a point where you kind of got a little too big for that founder style leadership around how you run and grow and operate and manage the business?
Years ago, we read this book from Gino Wickman called Traction, which got us on a good path years ago with some good tidbits and tricks and stuff we use. So 3.5 years ago, we kind of started on more, you know, more strategic, formalized leadership team. And in that, you know, we picked people that have been with us for, you know, a long time. They were the, you know, the stakeholders and carried our culture. And then we also added new people, which was weird feeling.
Especially at the leadership level. Like, you don't know if they're going to meet your core values. They haven't been with the organization. But we needed someone to run marketing at a higher level. And we needed a, you know, full-time HR director. We needed a new CFO, which has been awesome, because not only have we done one CFO, but now we're transitioning to our second CFO because the first one is retiring. So it's just cool to see even that starting to turn over already. Mm. You know, we found so many holes that if Al and I and Ben were to just dedicate 100% of our time to working on the business, what do we need to operate the company on a daily basis? And that's where we started 3.5 years ago. And probably a year and a half into that, the three of us work nothing but on the business now. No more day-to-day responsibilities, so it's even better than working your own job with some of the flexibility and the time and really getting back to the passion of why the business was started and taking the dream and the vision and really wanting to help the customer down and then having the full support staff through it to do it.
So you got this team. You've built it out. Mm-hmm. How many employees do you have right now?
We're about 175.
How do you plan on growing, or what's your 3-year picture look like?
The 3-year picture is going from about 140, 145 million to a minimum of 250 million with at least 250 staff members. We just truly believe in our industry. There's still so much more room for growth. Part of that will be through acquisitions and partnerships as well too. But it's even come back to now that Al, Ben, and I can work on the business 100% of the time. The acceleration of where the business is going is even faster than it was in the early days.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about, okay, 175, we're going to grow. We're going to add quite a few people. We're going to add $100 million plus to our revenue. What's keeping you up at night around that? How do you maintain your culture? How do you, because you care so much about the business and each other and the people, how do you keep it all together? What's keeping you up at night as it relates to that growth?
Well, we are making actions so that we have better sleep. But what does keep me up in there?
Did you get an aura ring or something and, you know, make the room 65 degrees? And
yeah. That's all in there, right? That's the status quo. But the next level for what does really keep me up is, you know, really transferring, mentoring, and leading the next generations. But having not just our leadership team do it, not just us do it, but like all of our supervisors, managers, team leads – believe in doing that. Like, you have to pick your next leader in every level and pour into them. Because the people, even the way we described going over our ceiling, it's all a personal growth thing. You know what I mean? For me, even if it's a company or a departmental ceiling that you hit, it all is a personal growth thing. You know, because people are what makes up the company, right? If you don't get that growth, you know, personally, professionally, and you just aren't going to be able to move forward. And so I, you know, what keeps me up is making sure something big, because it is getting big and it has been big, feels small to each individual person. You know what I mean? Like, that's what keeps me up. Like, I got to still know everybody's, my job, we think it's funny though, my job is to know everybody's name. So I spend time with every person. It's hard to spend time in a small way with 170 people. But I intentionally, like, half of my morning is all just saying hello to people and checking in on them and just, you know, because that's how I've always been. And I don't want to ever give that up. I don't care how I can do it, you know. I know God has some kind of plan to keep it going, even if we get to, you know, 1,000 people. There's going to be a way where in some, you know, frequency, I want to just be in front of every single person in some way in a month or whatever. And that's kind of what keeps me up. So I don't know about you.
I think it's similar. It's, you know, I've got the confidence in our leadership team, business skill-wise, to operate the business, to move it forward, you know, in the normal areas that they're experts in. But it's driving down the core values and the philosophy into the second and third tier of management. You know, your supervisors, your mid-level management. It's making sure that they're all on board as we continue to expand and we grow. We've been talking a lot about, like, what is the company to ensure that it's still here 50 years from now, but has the same core values, has the same, obviously, Al and I will be gone at that point. Who knows what the Lord will do, but to make sure that we're practicing that the leadership will continue to move forward 50 years from now.
I just, one, love your approach to growing a 50-year company or a 100-year company. How do we keep this going? How do we make it small for people because it's meaningful to them? It's important to them. So I love all that. And then when you think about the risks to that, do you see any ceilings that are forming now? Are there any current pressure points or something that feels a little bit fragile, issues that are unresolved that could sneak up on you?
There's a few ideas coming to mind, and they have different areas of impact. One is at the industry level. I'm thinking, you know, at the leadership level, even at the day-to-day operations of the company, there's multiple type of things just popping in my brain. I'll just try to pick one. But like the industry for us, obviously, I think every industry is facing this. You know, there's the new world of AI coming out, you know, and that type of thing where you kind of...
You wouldn't like, be a podcast that... in 2026 without AI being considered a risk or an opportunity.
Yeah. So I've been reading a book called The Great Game of Business. I don't know if you've read that book before.
Yep.
And it talks about that type of thing about like, here, I'm going to go ahead and figure out ways to offload mundane, repeatable things, things that people don't like to do, because the value of that person isn't in that. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of connects things to, you know, the game and motivating and inspiring and being like very open and transparent about everything, you know, which a lot of businesses are uncomfortable doing, but it's all for a purpose of capturing the, you know, the emotions or the essence or passion of the person working with you rather than just, oh, they're drilling this hole perfectly. You know what I mean? Or, you know, bolting down that nut perfectly, you know, get them to look up, right? Which is more of a, you know, like, hey, let's get people fear, oh, a robot's going to take over my job. Well, you might have to push the button, make sure the robot works. And wouldn't that be better than like getting carpal tunnel because you keep on turning your wrist every day? I mean, I think about the positives personally of technology and love it, but because I love change and not everybody's in that room, in that mindset, right? But it's good. I fear things when they don't change, to be honest with you.
Because it's going to sneak up on you and get you without you paying attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ready for it.
That's right. So if somebody is listening here to our show and they're in the part of the business like you've been where the business is growing, they're getting seemingly what they want from the business, but the life they have, the life they are leading is really quietly falling apart. What would advice do you want to give them before it gets really expensive for them to ignore those things?
There's a trust that needs to happen in a process that, again, happens all around us. The observation of things, even your example of history, it always repeats itself. And I think there is a pattern or a framework that you can follow that other people have forged. You don't have to come up with something new. And just leaning into processing, you know, of like simplifying things, like these principles of just, hey, let's figure out how we can simplify. Let's figure out how we can delegate. Let's figure out how we can get some kind of order out of chaos, or even changing our expectations. Meaning like, I'm going to make real, you know, relevant and attainable goals, right? Like things that can be accomplished. And I'm going to ask other people to help, and I'm going to be honest. And when we go in our journey and think back to even the quality of life that we would love for our people that work with us and for ourselves, you know, my buddy here said earlier, like, well, I could just work harder and it might hurt the family, you know. It's like, no, you need to leave. You know, we need to have weekends off. We need leave at 5, you know. The vacation time, the PTO time is for that, you know. We have people over the years like, can I just get money for my PTO? I'm like, no, you have to take off. You know, that's part of it. There's all these little factors. Again, not anything we come up with or that we created new, but there's some smart, wise things that we should kind of do little by little and make sure as we're responsible for 170 people's, you know, paychecks, right? That turns into really, it's their family. It's providing for their family. It's making sure they have a good quality of life, making sure we have a good quality of life. And I find that the more I lean into that, the less work I do. Even for them, if I give them the philosophy to say, hey, I want you to find your replacement, what does that mean? Well, throughout the process of finding your replacement, you are going to think about how others can succeed. You're going to give them little tasks to do. You're going to give them and inspire them to be more. You're going to give them space so they can fill it in, right? And that would take more off of you, and in turn, better quality life for you and better work experience for you and for them, you know. Creating different accountability charts, whatever you might want to put into it as like, you know, the formalized way of doing it, I think it's just a good way to live, right? That you live and move among people and you're treating people better than yourself, or you're again honoring others, you know, in that way, there's these things that spill over, and that's the byproduct we've seen by just focusing on that. It's not just like, hey, I got to get this bottom line and this profit right? If you're too honed in on that, you'll never see the big picture, the life that's happening around you, or the people that are growing or not growing around you.
Mm-hmm. Find a mentor. Find someone who's 10, 15, 20 years ahead of you in life. It might be marriage, might be kids, you know, whatever it is, but find someone who can help pull you above whatever you're sitting in to get a different perspective on whatever might be going on. Hmm. As we know too, if the things aren't right at home or relationships outside of work are going sideways, that stuff all affects your work. So it's not just a straight work philosophy that everything has to be correct there, because so much of the other stuff bleeds over into everything that we do. So I'd say that the biggest change for us, for me even personally, especially when my kids were young, is just finding someone who's 10, 15, 20 years out from where you are. They're going to give you a whole different perspective on everything you're walking through and how bad is it. Usually it's not as bad as we think it is, but someone with that age, with that experience, can give us a different perspective on it.
Love it.
Good. Thanks, buddy. All right.
So we're going to go into a little bit of a five leadership abilities analysis segment before we wrap up this episode. Let's start with simplify. Al explicitly names this in his closing advice. Trust the process, simplify, delegate, establish realistic goals, be transparent with numbers. The clearest example is their core values. Six words: wisdom, diligence, integrity, character, humility, and grace. They also use the 70-60% rule to simplify two-way door decisions rather than overthinking reversible choices. Delegate and elevate. Ryan brought delegation principles early and taught Al and Ben to reproduce themselves through the process. All three hit ceilings rooted in their inability to let go. Al was overwhelmed with too many hats. Ben couldn't release control of finances. And Ryan worked himself into the ground rather than trusting a CFO. The turning point was hiring a formal leadership team 3.5 years ago, department heads for marketing, HR, and finance. And the result was that all three founders now work 100% on the business, not in it, and growth has actually accelerated ever since. Next ability is the ability to predict, and their three-year picture is concrete. Grow from 145 million to 250 million or better with 250 or more employees through both organic growth and acquisitions. And maybe more notably, Al identifies AI and automation as the current ceiling, not just externally with industry resistance, but also internally, their own people resisting change. Next is systemize. Ryan is the group's systemizer. He joined as a consultant and built the operational backbone. Their most notable system outside of operations is partnership counseling. When things got bad enough, they nearly dissolved the partnership. They hired a local CEO, family business advisor, and met weekly or monthly for about a year. They also systemize culture by intentionally cascading core values through second and third tiers of management. And Al spends half his mornings walking the floors, saying hello to all 175 people. And then finally, structure. The business is structured in three clear lanes. Al owns marketing, Ben owns sales and training, and Ryan owns finance and operations. That division became their formal structure after years of blurred roles. They've since built out department heads underneath each lane. The CFO hire was the hardest structural move, especially because Ryan's daughter worked in HR, but it was the one that unlocked the next level. And that structure for them is what made the founders' elevation possible.